It's the Larry Kudlow Show. Free market prosperity starts here. Now, here's Larry Kudlow.
Hello, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show. As always, great pleasure to be with you. Broadcasting live from in studio in Midtown Manhattan. And please, during the week, join us. Fox Business News, the name of the show is Kudlow. 4 to 5 p.m. every day, Monday through Friday. Can't make it at 4, please text your favorite 9-year-old. And she will show you how to DVR the show. Here, you can live stream us over the internet. LarryKudlowShow.com, LarryKudlowShow.com. Picked up all across the country, around the world, throughout the solar system, and the Milky Way. And unfortunately, I reckon President Biden forgot to listen today because he doesn't have a good memory. And that's the reason he's not being charged with any criminal indictment in this bizarre, breaking news-worthy story that came out, I don't know, 24, 36 hours ago. Make it 48 hours ago. Not quite. It's an incredible story. Incredible story. And we'll comment on it. We're going to look at the political and legal aspects. I mean, I want to read you. There's a couple things I want to emphasize here at the top. First of all, just to remind the special counsel, Robert Hur, the basic point he makes is, I'll quote, still, in a case where the government must prove that Mr. Biden knew he had possession of the classified Afghanistan documents after the vice presidency and chose to keep those documents, knowing he was violating the law, we expect that at trial, his attorneys would emphasize limitations in his recall. His recall. So they call it sympathetic, well-meaning, elderly man with a poor memory. All right. If he's a simple, well-meaning, elderly man with a poor memory, which is okay, fine, that's what happens when you get older sometimes. Not everyone, but some people. Then he shouldn't be president, shouldn't be commander-in-chief. And that obvious point is what's driving the Biden White House crazy right now, as they blast her for making these comments, discrediting him. But the other point I want to make to you, having had quite a bit of experience with this myself when I served in government in the White House during the Trump years, and that is no one except the president has the authority to remove classified or top-secret documents from their office. You can't take them off campus, can't put them in your home, can't take them home at night. No one except the president has authority to declassify and then remove, take possession and remove the documents, presumably to a safe place, secure place. This is so important. It has not received enough attention. This is the fundamental crime that Mr. Biden had been making for a good 15 years. Here's the deal. As a senator, we learned, he took classified documents, removed them, and they were found in his home and in his office after he left the vice presidency. But this is as a senator, going way back. Then he did the same thing as a vice president. He is not allowed to do that. Those are felonies. Those violate national security law and they violate the Presidential Records Act. He committed those crimes. In fact, just as a chronology, what came out of the Robert Hur report is at least as recently as 2017, which is now some such 6 years plus ago, he told his ghostwriter that he had these classified documents in the garage or wherever he had them. Not last year or when the Trump thing broke or when Mike Pence broke, where they made a big show of rushing to tell the FBI and the Justice Department, blah, 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 oh, we're cooperating. Biden knew at least 6+ years ago when he was, shall we say, had a better memory. He wasn't as doughty then as he is now. He knew what he was doing, and he broke the law. And then it'll go back. I don't know how far back it's going to go, but he did that as a senator. And I guarantee you there will be a little bit of a investigative hunt to find out as a senator. When he left the Senate, did he do the same thing? Because he had these documents from his Senate days, as well as his vice presidential days. You cannot do this. It's against the law. Now, Donald Trump is being busted for that in a two-tiered justice system, even though Trump, as president, under the Presidential Records Act, had the authority to declassify and then move documents into a safe place. And Trump didn't put them in his garage with papers flowing and, you know, in open bags and all that nonsense. Trump in Mar-a-Lago was living in a Secret Service fortress, well guarded. I don't know if you've ever been down there. I've been down there many, many times. It's not some open-air house on a nice street with a beautiful old car next door. There's a Secret Service. They run all over the place. They know me. You got to check in, check out, believe me. So this is stuff that Biden did. And his White House is now trying to attack this guy, Robert Herr, because Herr dared to suggest that he had bad memory. But it was the anecdotes proliferating. We already know that. We saw it again Thursday night at that catastrophic press conference. He couldn't even remember the presidents or whereabouts of Mexico and Egypt. They're not, but folks, Mexico and Egypt, they're not that close together. I mean, seriously. They're probably airports between the two. You could fly from Cairo to Mexico City, but it's quite a hike. And they have different presidents. One's Obrador, sometimes called AMLO. The other guy's El Sisi. El Sisi likes the United States. Obrador, not so much. But that's a separate topic. Now, I want to emphasize this because this is the key point to me. Now, maybe Biden forgot the documents. Okay. To be honest with you, I think there's too much emphasis on this bad memory. The bad memory raises another point. The bad memory raises a point that the guy's in so much physical and mental decline, they shouldn't be president. And it happens to come out. I mean, we've known this for a while, but it happens to come out in this, shall we say, authoritative special counsel's report, okay? If you believe it's authoritative special counsel's report. All right, fine. But he broke the law any number of times. Willfully, that word, willfully, he knew what he was doing. And Herr says, I'm not going to bust him because he'll never pass the jury. Well, I don't know. That's James Comer stuff when they went in the merry-go-round with Hillary Clinton. You know, we're not going to bust Hillary Clinton for 3,000 washed emails. Because they're gone. I don't know that that's what a special counsel should do. I mean, Andy McCarthy, former prosecutor, National Review, great friend, tried to get him on the show today, but we got Greg Jarrett, who's equally brilliant. You know, Andy McCarthy said, once you start figuring out whether the jury is going to convict or not, you're essentially saying the guy's guilty. Of course he's guilty. That's a separate matter than the bad memory. The bad memory should disqualify him from being president. He should step down under the 25th Amendment. We will talk about this with our panel at the half hour. But Biden broke the law, and Donald Trump did not break the law. It may sound similar, but presidents can do under the Presidential Records Act what Trump did. vice presidents, senators, House members, former directors of the National Economic Council like myself, Treasury secretaries, you name it. We can't do that. In fact, I'll tell you an anecdote. I mean, I said this on the TV show last night. We had Claudia Tenney on, who's calling for the 25th Amendment. We were on with Byron Donalds, two of the smartest people in the House you could imagine. Point is, I'm sitting up on the second floor. I got an office on the second floor of the White House, and I get all – I mean, I have the highest security clearance. I'm a National Security Council member, blah, blah, blah. When I first got there, you know, I'd get these classified documents. Actually, the one above that is the top secret document. And it's a long day, and I said, well, I didn't read it, so can I take it home? And my ladies who work for me said, no, you can't do that. They'd be horrified. Can't do that. No, you get busted. If you are caught, you're going to jail. They were telling me, Susan Varga was telling me last night when they had their orientation and their training. That was a huge part of it. You have to keep that stuff in a safe in your office, and if you move it, it has to go downstairs to the Situation Room. And one of the skiffs or where they have also safes. But you can't take it out of the building. You cannot take it out of the building, even though I had security clearance. Biden took it out of the building, but the stuff should have gone in the archive. It's okay, by the way. It's okay for him to look at that stuff. You know, if he wants to write a book and so forth, fine. But the way you do it is the documents go to the National Archives, and they have skiffs. They have these secure rooms, and you sit down and read it. And I think you're allowed to take notes. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure you are. That's okay. You can't take it to your house, to your Penn Biden Center office. You can't put it in your Corvette glove compartment. You can't do any of that stuff. He did that, and he's wrong. He took it out, and that is illegal. Willfully. But that's completely different than Trump. The words may sound sane, but the law does not apply to the president. And this Jack Smith thing is crazy. It should be abolished completely. All they're doing is just going after Trump. Right? Two-tier justice system. Weaponization. Throw Trump in jail for 700 years because then Biden could beat him. I'm not sure he could beat him in jail, but the fact is Biden himself should not be running. He should not be commander-in-chief. That was the other part of the Hur report. Not just the illegality part, but the other part is now what unfolds is Mr. Biden's mental incompetency. So I just want to carve that up here at the start. It's all part of the same package, Hur's report, Robert Hur's report. That's why the White House is trashing the guy. But they're basically trashing him, you know. Listen carefully, because they're trying to cover up the crime as well as the mental incompetence. And he's 0-2. And the third strike's going to be when the Democratic Party decides it's got to go. Got to go. We'll talk more about this. That's a political question. I just wanted to establish at my outset the legal issues, which are so important and have to a large extent been overlooked. Not enough has been talked about why what Biden did was wrong. And incidentally, he did it when his mind was much sharper. 15 years ago, 7 years ago, whatever. He has deteriorated enormously in recent years. By the way, I'm sorry about that. I mean, that's old age. It happens to elderly people. I'm not crowing about that. I'm raising the point about whether he should be commander in chief, but it's not personal. But the legal part is even more important, and the contrast with Donald Trump is even more important. I'm going to take a quick break. We'll have our panel at the half hour. I got a couple other things to say about this whole story. I'm Kudlow. It's great to be with you. We'll be right back.
This is the
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
The Larry Kudlow Show. Now, back to the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. Just skipping over now, we'll leave the Biden problem alone for 1 second. We'll pick it up again at the half hour. I just want to mention, while Biden is being incompetent and illegal, he's also bankrupting the country. And we will talk at the top of the next hour with the great Kevin Hassett, former CA chair and all-around smart guy. The new Congressional Budget Office numbers, Congressional Watchdog, came out for the budget, and they're just awful. This is the Biden baseline over the next 10 years, which is how they do this. Spending is going to go from $6 trillion to $10 trillion. $6 to $10 trillion. Not quite a double. The budget deficit, sometimes Biden brags about the budget deficit. The budget deficit is going to go from $1.7 trillion to $2.6 trillion. And debt held by the public is estimated to go from $26 trillion now to $48 trillion in 10 years. This is the Biden bankruptcy budget. In fact, the CBO does us all a favor by looking at the 50-year average. All right, spending 21%, that's the 50-year average. It's going to 24. This is, I beg your pardon, as a percent of GDP, as a percent of the economy, from 21 to 24. The deficit goes from 3.7% to 6.4%, and the debt held by the public, listen to this, the debt held by the public goes from 48% of GDP to 116% of GDP. Can you imagine that? This is under Biden's reign. I mean, talk about mentally incompetent, economically incompetent. And the economy is expect to grow by less than 2% over the next 10 years. So we're getting no growth, massive spending, huge deficits, and humongous debt. And this is not sustainable. And, of course, the entitlement story is just as bad, if not worse. So we are headed for, I mean, I know the economy has been better, and I acknowledge the economy has been better. I didn't credit Biden with it. I'm just saying the resilient economy turned out better than most of the economists thought, including myself. But that's not the point. The point is, when you look down the road, this fiscal picture is a picture of a bad economy, a weak economy, and probably another bout of inflation. So he's bankrupted the country, as well as illegally and incompetently tried to manage it. I'm Kudlow. We'll have the Robert Herr story, more on Joe Biden and the 25th Amendment on the other side of the break. Stick around, folks. Lots more to do.
Wall Street to the White House. This is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show. We continue the saga of Joe Biden and the Robert Herr Special Counsel's report. And I guess I'll apologize at the top because we've got three, not two people, but I had to bring in the great Greg Jarrett once this story broke and the 25th Amendment part of the story broke because we needed our ace legal beagle. We also have brilliant Caroline Downey, National Review reporter and visiting fellow at the Independent Women's Forum. By the way, Caroline, I think I'm still a trustee or director of that. I have to check.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, whatever Heather Richardson Higgins tells me to do. We do have the great Joe Concha, who's Fox News contributor and the author of Come On, Man, The Truth About Biden's No Good Horrible Presidency. And boy, is he right on that. And the aforementioned Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst, great author. His latest book is called The Constitution of the United States and Other Patriotic Documents. So we'll try to be brief, but we can do it. We've done three before in radio. Greg, I want to start with you. I'm reading your op-ed piece, Willfully Retained and Disclosed Classified Materials as a Private Citizen in Direct Violation of the Espionage Act. By the way, I thought it was also a direct violation of the Presidential Records Act. And then you go on to say what Herr is really saying is that Biden is not competent to stand trial, but somehow he's competent to serve as president. And then you say is compelling evidence the president's cabinet should now consider invoking the relevant provisions of the 25th Amendment to remove Biden from office. As you may know, Claudia Tenney started that Thursday. She was on the TV show last night. Others have picked it up, Greg. Has this thing worked, by the by, mechanically?
Well, you'd have to have the vice president and half the cabinet vote to remove him, and then it goes to Congress, and you'd have to have two-thirds vote. The problem here is the cabinet are all enablers. I mean, they well know, as Kamala Harris does, that Joe Biden is mentally disabled. I mean, that's essentially what the Robert Hur 345-page report said, that he broke the law. He did it intentionally. He knew it was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But he's so old and mentally lost, confused, and bereft of memory that we can't prosecute him in front of a jury. And, you know, normally, so the 25th Amendment is not going to work because of the enablers. And, you know, I got to tell you, if any American family read this report and it was about their elder parent, they would move, as I said in my column, immediately for a conservatorship or a power of attorney to take control of the parent's decision making and to manage affairs. And here, it's the president of the United States. This is perilous. It's dangerous for the nation.
You know what Steve Forbes said last night on the TV show? It was fabulous. We were talking about this and the enablers, as you say, which is correct. And the biggest enabler is Mrs. Jill Biden, right? Jill Biden.
Yeah.
And Forbes said in Washington, and I hadn't heard this before, she is the Mrs. Wilson of our time. Now, go back 100 more, in 1919 and 20, Woodrow Wilson was incapacitated. He had a bad stroke. His wife, Edith Wilson, ran the country for about a year and a half. This is a true story in history.
Yeah.
I was there, for heaven's sakes. Just kidding. But I'm just saying, so Forbes says it's Mrs. Wilson all over again.
She's the one doing this. You know,
Jill
Biden, the entire Biden family, they're addicted to power and prestige.
Yeah.
But compassion for an ailing husband and father should take precedence over their own, enjoyment of power.
Right again. I mean, yeah, look, this is about the country. Caroline Downey, I know you've heard of Mr. Wilson. I don't know if you knew Mrs. Wilson, young reporter that you are.
Well, actually, I was vaguely familiar with this story, and it's funny. As I was reading about how Jill Biden was so instrumental in effectively keeping Biden up on stilts despite his obvious cognitive decline, I mean, it's really tragic. Like you said, if you have elderly relatives, this is abuse, frankly. For the direct relative, the closest loved one of the president to be intimately aware of his mental and physical ineptitude, but instead of urging retirement to the mansions of rest, which this reminded me of George Washington, what he invoked in his farewell address, there's dignity in stepping down with grace and knowing when it is your right time. Jill Biden, though, she's complicit in this kind of cover-up of Biden's deteriorated condition, and that's just so Trump can stay out of the White House.
Well,
when politics comes above family, you know that there's something particularly dystopian about this political moment.
And Joe Concha, you know, I think all this is true, their lust for power. But now the question is, I don't know who these people are, but I hear, this is a conspiracy, ref, that the Democratic power brokers, I'm not sure who that is. Is that Obama? It's not the Clintons anymore. I don't know. Maybe it is. David Axelrod or David Plouffe, part of the Obama gang. Anyway, that the Democratic power brokers are setting Biden up to pull him. And it'll either happen Democratic National Convention where they can change the rules or sooner. But the thing is, Joe, I never quite figured out who these are. And then my related question, Joe, is how could anybody in their right mind have sent Joe Biden out for that Thursday night press conference, which was a catastrophe? How could they have done that?
That was the White House communications team.
Wow.
Right? And they thought it was a really swell idea to put together this hastily assembled press conference. They never had press conferences, right? And when they do, they call a lid on the previous 5 or 6 days before that so they could prep Biden as much as possible. Mm. And just to throw him out there like that, that's panic, all caps, capital P-A-N-I-C, right? And we all saw what happened from there. You had Joe Biden yelling at reporters like Grandpa Simpson, right? Mm. Then he confuses the Egyptian president with Mexico's president. Then he's asked about his son, Bo, and can't even remember the name of the rosary that he says he wears every day in his honor. So it couldn't go worse if they tried. And now the problem is, it's kind of like, you know, the 49ers in the Super Bowl tomorrow, they have a quarterback named Brock Purdy, right, who was a backup to other people that the organization thought was better. But then they got to Purdy and they're like, oh, wow, this kid is really good. He could be one of the great ones like Montana or Steve Young. The reason why I bring this up is, who is the backup on the Democratic bench right now that if you do, if you're Axelrod and Obama and Plouffe and you take Biden off the field, then who's going in to lead your team? It's not Kamala Harris because she's at 28% approval. That's like a Nixonian leaving the White House for good kind of level when you're in the 20s, right? So if it isn't Kamala, then I keep going, I guess, back to Gavin Newsom. But he's got a horrible record to defend in California. And in swing states, Gavin Newsom's not going to play very well with, you know, the blue dog, blue. Again, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, Nevada. So I think they're in a really horrible spot right now. And the only Hail Mary they have at this point is that D.C. trial against Trump as far as January 6th, because you know you're going to get a very favorable jury. The only way Trump loses is if he's convicted, and we don't even know if these are going to get the trial before Election Day.
Later. You know, I thought you were going to say substituting Spiro Agnew for Nixon.
Oh, yes. Well, that was a little before my time. So I went with a modern NFL analogy.
I was kicking during those. That was the most fun, man, the early 70s. Holy cow. Nixon had several vice presidents. People forget that. Anyway, I don't want to I digress. Carolyn, do you have any idea who are these Washington Democratic power brokers? Right? This is kind of your beat. First of all, let's go back to Joe's other point. The White House comms decided to put him out there. Now, what team are they playing for? All right. And second of all, who are these Democrat power brokers that are going to redo this whole story and get rid of Joe Biden? Because I still think Greg Jarrett is right. The enablers in the cabinet are not going to do what they should do. So somebody's got to do it from the outside. You'd have to have statements from Democratic graybeards. I could go back in time in the Republican Party like a Haley Barbour or a Bill Brock. I don't know who, a Bob Dole might pull the plug on somebody. But I don't know who the heck would do that now.
Well, I'm sure there's trouble in paradise. I'm sure there's a lot of squabbling about what is to be done. But after that speech, it just became so obvious that, I mean, Biden, it's a metaphor for America, because America is also old and senile. That is the power we've become, we've degenerated into amid rising adversaries. They know this is untenable, but the thing is, Kamala Harris as the successor, that was not preferable to, I think, most of these Democratic operatives either, because she's deeply unpopular. But now I think they've kind of been forced into that. I think Kamala, her path has never been clearer, but like it's very unfavorable because she has fumbled every single project she's been assigned to. Her own staffers are mutinying against her. I mean, what an unbelievable situation where the president and his right-hand woman are both not great choices. And, you know, at the end of the day, we are running octogenarians or soon to be octogenarians for president. And the fact that the country is willing to gamble like that with age, I think says something more deeply troubling.
You know, Greg, you could have, I was just thinking, you could have a committee, a bipartisan committee of doctors that would raise the questions that need to be raised and force the guy into an elaborate competency test. I was just reading Ronnie Jackson.
Yeah.
Now, Jackson is regarded as a Trump guy, but actually Jackson was Obama's doctor also.
Yes.
He's a very talented guy, but I'm just saying, I suppose you could have, you'd need a, your point about the neighbors is the correct point. So you'd need somebody from outside the White House to force the issue. I wouldn't say force it politically. First, you have to force a competency test or a battery of tests, wouldn't you?
Right, which he would never pass.
Right.
Even at the height of his intellectual powers decades ago, I'm not even sure Joe Biden could have passed a basic intelligence test. He was the dim bulb of the U.S. Senate and used to be roundly mocked of, and now it's just pathetic. Look, I penned a column 2 months ago arguing that prominent members of the Democratic Party would take matters into their own hands, and they would go to the Biden family, and they would cite perhaps not the polling numbers that continue to recede and crater, but the mental acuity. And you ask, well, who is that? Well, on the Senate side, it's Democratic leader Chuck Schumer and the Majority Whip Dick Durbin, who have had close relationships with Joe Biden. You could toss in Mark Warner, Amy Klobuchar. These are all leaders in the Senate.
Yeah,
the
good point.
Way.
Yes.
And if they go to the family and they say, you got to pull the plug for the good of the nation, I think it could happen.
Those are good. You're right. Those are good names. They're all Democratic leaders in the Senate. You're absolutely right. They're national players. So, yeah, that's a good point. I wonder if they would recruit doctors along the way. I mean, the guy's never really passed any of these tests, as far as we know.
Getting him to take a competency test strikes me as a close impossibility. He just won't agree to it, and neither will Jill, because they fear the results.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right, let's take a quick break, kids, and then we'll come back and talk some more about the politics of this. Joe Concha, Fox News contributor. Caroline Downey, National Review. Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. We're talking about the, of course, the Robert Hur report about Joe Biden and his hidden documents and his mental competency problem. We got Joe Concha, Fox News contributor, Caroline Downey of National Review, Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst. Joe Concha, I would reckon the big winner here is Donald Trump.
Well, people forget, Larry, on the same day that the Hur report came down, earlier that morning, because the Hur report was so huge, Donald Trump was scoring big wins with the Supreme Court, and not just the conservative judges. And this is very important. If this came back 6-3, that Trump could be on the ballot in Colorado, then we'd hear from the MSNBCs and CNNs of the world that, well, that's just the MAGA Supreme Court that's trying to help Trump. But we heard arguments from Kagan, from Sotomayor, from Jackson Brown, we heard from all of them saying basically that questioning the Colorado's stance in that regard. So this could very easily come back as 9-0 or 8-1. If that happens, that is a definitive win for Donald Trump because, again, he makes the argument around election interference and stomping on democracy, the very people that say they're trying to save it. And yet he was obviously doing very well there. He seemed to be very happy with it. So you have Trump doing well as far as polling, as far as his legal challenges. Fannie Willis, we all know that the disaster that is. Alvin Bragg doesn't have a case. Let's face it, that's going in a pretty good direction. But also, Biden, obviously, with these polls coming out, 76% of people, NBC News poll, don't think he has the mental acuity to be president. I mean, those are devastating numbers. But you still see MSNBC, Larry, and you still see Rachel Maddow, who's supposed to be the smart one over there, who says Joe Biden is lucid because he rides a bike. Which, you know, my
that.
Four-year-old can ride a bike. I'm pretty
that.
Sure because I can operate a Schwinn. Yeah. That doesn't make me mentally fit automatically. And then you even have Biden, you know, all these unforced errors. He spoke to Francois Mitterrand. He died when Patrick Mahomes was 1 years old in 1996. I mean, what's next? He's going to talk about a Zoom call he had with Charles de Gaulle. When does this end?
Mitterrand was the longtime head of Germany. Part of that was during Reagan's era.
Yeah.
He was in the G7. Caroline Downey, I think that just politically, to kind of pick up where Joe Concha left off, we're going to see an even worse downward bounce in Biden's polls after this. In other words, as bad as it is, it's going to get worse. In other words, there are other shoes to fall. which is why I'm still interested in this 25th Amendment story. We'll get back to Greg Jarrett in a moment. But just in political terms, Caroline, I don't think Biden is bottomed. I don't. That press conference on Thursday night, that's not a bottom. He's still a stock looking for a bottom.
Right. I mean, Robert Hur's report reaffirmed Trump's longstanding argument that there is a two-tier system of justice. And then Biden turns around and he does exactly what you would expect of a dementia patient. He's irritable. He's agitated. He's, you know, combative about the fact that he is not mentally declining when he obviously is, basically making us realize our worst fears. So, I mean, Biden absolutely, you know, he put the nail in the coffin on his presidency. His presidency is effectively vacant.
Yeah.
So, yes, that does help Trump. Like I said, it's an empty, shallow situation where he hasn't been running the show for a long time, and his press conference just reaffirmed that. And also, back to the two-tier system of justice, Robert Hur concluded that Biden willfully violated the law in retaining national defense intelligence. Yet, he shouldn't stand because he's not competent enough to do so. Meanwhile, you know, the Biden DOJ special counsel charged against Trump with Section 793, that required only that prosecutors establish gross negligence, which is much easier to prove than willfulness. So, again, it just – I think Americans, what they see here is not only weakness and a country falling apart in a vacant presidency, but a double standard of justice.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. You know, Greg Jarrett, I talked about this at the top of the show this morning. I mentioned it last night. And I went through this because I had all the clearances. But there's you referred to the Espionage Act in your column, but what about the Presidential Records Act?
You violated that.
You can't, right. Vice, you can't. The only person that can take documents and declassify them and then safekeep them as the president, not a senator, not a vice president. I might add, you know, humbly, not an NEC director or a CEA chairman or anything like that. There's only one guy that can do it, according to the law, and that's the president. Well, Biden did stuff that was completely illegal, and the fact that he's mentally incompetent, I don't want that to obscure the illegality because, Greg, he wasn't incompetent 15 years ago. Or even 7 or 10 years ago, right? He wasn't. He just did this stuff willfully.
You're right. I mean, legally, Robert Hur, the special counsel, got just about everything wrong. He admitted, as you point out, Larry, that Biden broke the law.
Yes.
He did it intentionally, as evidence of that, as witnesses of that.
Yes.
But that his current state makes it impossible to prosecute him? That's not what the law says. At trial, the issue is not Biden's cognitive impairment now. What it was years ago,
right,
when he illegally removed, stored, and shared classified documents. And he also claims Biden's cooperation vitiates the crimes. No, it doesn't. Cooperation is never a defense under the law.
Yeah, great point. Those are so important points, Greg Jarrett. All right, more to be continued. Kids, you're terrific. Mr. Joe Conchin, Ms. Caroline Downey, and Greg Jarrett Esquire, our lawyer, our legal beagle. Thank you. Appreciate it. See you next week. Folks, we're going to take a break. I'm Kudlow. Other side of the break, going to bring in the brilliant Kevin Hassett, because Joe Biden, inept and illegal and incompetent, is also bankrupting the country. And we have to talk about that, too. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
It's the Larry Kudlow Show. Free market prosperity starts here. Now, here's Larry Kudlow.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. Great pleasure to be with you. By the way, you can live stream on the Internet this radio show, LarryKudlowShow.com, LarryKudlowShow.com. Hear us all across the country, around the world, and throughout the solar system. And we bring in my dear friend Kevin Hassett, former chair of the Council of Economic Advisors, now a distinguished visiting fellow at the Hoover Institution, and author of the great book, The Drift, Stopping America's Slide to Socialism, probably the most important book of the 21st century. Kevin, welcome back. You know, all the discussion about the Robert Hur special counsel's report and Joe Biden's illegalities and his incompetence, but there was a very important report out this week that we didn't cover properly. I'm going to get to it on the TV show this coming week. The CBO report on the budget, which is a catastrophe, an absolute catastrophe. And I'll just zip through some of these numbers to review. Spending goes from 21% of GDP to 24% of GDP over the 10-year window. This is the Biden budget baseline, essentially. The deficit goes from this is the 50-year average deficit, $3.7 trillion, bad enough, goes to $6.1 trillion. And then debt held by the public goes from 48% of GDP to 116% of GDP. These are very big numbers, and it cannot be good for the economy. And I see also, Kevin, their real GDP baseline is about, I'll call it 2%, slightly less than 2%, 1.9% for the 10-year period. So, you know, we've got a huge increase in spending, deficits and borrowing, and low economic growth.
Yeah, it's, you know, Larry, it's just amazing. And just as an aside for our listeners, I'm taking my life in my hands today because I'm giving a lecture at Harvard. And I got an email last night. Right now I'm standing in Harvard Yard. And so if random noises happen, it's not my fault. but literally I got an email from the people hosting me saying that they had hired off-duty policemen to protect me. Because I'm at Harvard and it's dangerous for conservatives. Can you imagine?
Wow.
and so Christine and I walked down this morning and there were five policemen there.
No kidding.
No kidding. But the issue is just that crazy liberalness that allows us to like no longer be safe, even on a major Ivy League campus without off-duty cops. The point is that's the recklessness that we see with government spending too. That there's absolutely no attention to traditional rules of order and prudence. And because of that, you know, right now what happened is that Joe Biden came in after COVID was gone. He used COVID as an excuse to take all the emergency measures and make them permanent. And frankly, if in the future, the next 10 years, there's a recession, which there will be, right, Larry? Like, we don't know when, but there will be. Then the whole number, everything blows up, right? Like, so right now, we can barely make it. The CBO model actually can't process the deficit and the debt as high as what's there in terms of modeling what effect it has on GDP. It's just too big. But if there's a recession, then who's going to lend money to the U.S.? And then at that point, like, we could be looking at an Argentine-style default. And so it's really crucial that we get ahead of the curve on this thing. It was something that you and I were really anxious about in 2019 before COVID, because we looked at the 10-year forecast back then and thought that they were unacceptable. Mm-hmm. But now we're spending $2 trillion a year more,
you know,
than what we thought in 2019. That's just incredible.
I mean, you know, one thing that with all this spending, Kevin, a point that Laffer makes occasionally, when you have these spending programs and you expand them and so forth, they come with a lot of regulations. So it's like a bad twofer. You're not only spending and displacing these resources from the private sector to the government, but you're also clamping down on businesses and how they interact in the economy. Because they all have strings attached to them, you know, what you can and cannot do. So essentially, it is a collectivist model, or it becomes a collectivist model. But I don't know what's the transmission for this model? I mean, all this money has been drained from the private sector to the public sector.
Right. And the bottom line is, and this is like a simple logical statement of truth, that if you spend a dollar, the government spends a dollar, then, you know, GDP goes up by whatever. And then next year it doesn't spend the dollar. Say you actually rein in spending. And so therefore, GDP goes down by whatever the effect of the dollar is. So the two cancel. But then you have to pay for it. And when you pay for it, you raise taxes on a dollar. And so an increase in government spending logically has to be a net negative in the long run. It has to be, right? Because when you take it away, whatever effect it had going on is coming off. And then you have to pay for it, and that's a negative. And so think about the massive negative we have coming. Because first, whatever effect government spending has going up, it's not zero. It's going to have to go down because we can't afford it. But then when we start to pay for the, you know, maybe 200% of GDP debt we're going to have, then that's going to be really, really hard without really hammering the economy. And so we're on a road to ruin. And you could say, like, what kind of a person – would drive us down a road like so recklessly? And it's, you know, like, if you have a driver who, you know, you can't prosecute because they're so clueless, then you could end on a road like this, right?
Kevin, what does this do to the inflation rate? They don't show much inflation in the CBO estimates.
They don't understand inflation. They don't understand inflation. But basically, if government spending is that big, then the only way you don't get serious inflation is if there's a big supply, positive supply side shock. That's not going to happen if the Democrats are in the White House. But if you were back in the White House, you could generate a big supply side shock to make, you know, both you would rein in government spending, but also make prices come down. But what they're going to do is they're going to attack supply and they're going to feed demand with all this government spending if they have the power to. And so don't think inflation is ever going away, not unless there's a new administration.
How much of this growth we've had? I mean, you and I have talked about it. Economists were short on the growth forecast, at least the last couple quarters. But how much of this growth is being driven by all this government spending?
You know, it's about 1% of it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's about 1%. So that's a big part of it, right? So we'd be talking about an anemic economy over the last year if we took away the government. And you know, a huge share of the jobs are also government jobs, especially state and local. The state and local governments, you know, have been basically bringing people back on that sort of separated during COVID.
Mm.
And that takes longer. You know, government does everything slower than everybody else, right? And so the COVID recovery in government was slower than it was for the private sector. And that's why we had so many state and local jobs go up over the last 12 months.
You know, Larry Lindsey makes that case. His latest report or two reports ago, he made this, that the overall GDP, let's say for the last four quarters, is 3.1. But on a private sector basis, I think he knocked it down to 2.9. But then he took out a couple other things and got it. It was about 2.6. So it really was not that strong. But, I mean, I think the bond markets are going to have a problem with this kind of debt, too. I mean, yeah. I don't think there's a direct correlation between deficits and interest rates. But if the Federal Reserve is buying fewer bonds, as they say, shrinking their balance sheet, and the government's selling more and more bonds, I would guess that would keep medium to long rates higher than they need to be, and that's not good for the economy either.
Yeah, or to put it another way, a nice rule of thumb is that the interest rate after inflation tends historically, going back to the 1800s, to be around 2.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the inflation rate is around 4, which is about where it is now, maybe a little less, maybe it's 3, then you're talking an interest rate should be between 5 and 6. And that's like all the way out to 30 years.
Mm.
And so right now, interest rates are way below that at the long end. And I think you and I both agree that it's just not possible that they stay there. And frankly, if people have been watching me and you talk about this on the Kudlow Show, as I'm sure maybe many of your listeners have, that they wouldn't have been as surprised by all this Fed action in the last week, where they said, well, actually, you're pricing in all these cuts, but we can't do that.
Right. That's right. No, that's exactly right. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, there's going to have to be, if Trump wins, Kevin, there's going to have to be a plan. We're going to have a budget restraint plan, a very tough, mm-hmm. you know, Russell Vogt tried, we tried, you tried, Mick Mulvaney tried. We didn't quite get there. I mean, Trump's numbers were lower than Biden's numbers, but there's going to have to be a thorough overhaul. I mean, there's just
right.
no two ways about
right.
it.
And it's something that, you know, candidate Trump has been talking a lot about. And people say something like, oh, he won't be tough on spending because he wasn't before. But that was then.
Mm.
That was like when spending was way lower and there were so many things that had to accomplish, like building a wall. The issue is that one of the favorite things that he has to talk about now out there on the campaign trail is impoundment. I don't know if you've heard any of
yes.
these
yes.
bills.
Is...
But historically, the president could impound things. The first time was Thomas Jefferson when they basically Congress paid for a whole bunch of warships. But Jefferson figured that would there'd be no reason for that because instead of fighting France over Louisiana, he was going to buy it.
Right.
And so he canceled the warships. So the point is just the impoundment is a power that was taken away a couple of decades ago by a liberal Congress. And you know, the president wants that power back.
You're 100% right. 100%. I'd love the impoundment argument. You know, Russell Vogt makes it. We're all going to have to, you know, talk to him about it and make sure it sticks. But I think he'll like
oh, it
that.
Does.
He'll
no,
like
he's,
that.
No, he's all over that. I promise you. And impoundment
it's just one of those things that when you talk to our friends on the campaign, when we sort of say, well, what are the economic issues that it seems like are getting the most traction for you guys? Then one of the things everybody always lists is empowerment. Honest to goodness, it could really be a game changer, even more so than some kind of Graham Rudman-like budget deal. Just give the president empowerment authority.
Well, Kevin, you and Christy look both ways when you cross the street up there at Harvard Yard. All right.
Yeah, and next time, you got to tell everybody about your dog. That's all I got to say.
All right, my dear friend. Right. Thanks. Good luck. Folks, I'm Cudlow. That was a great Kevin Asset. We'll take a break. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk to John Carney of Breitbart about Federal Reserve and interest rates. I'm Cudlow. We'll be right back.
This is the Larry Kudlow Show. This is the news and talk station of New York with Larry Kudlow.
Stop meddling with it.
Real New York, 77 WABC. Now, back to the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. Speaking of the economy, as we were with Kevin Hassett in these CBO budget numbers, let's turn to the Federal Reserve and interest rates and the economy. We go to John Carney, Breitbart economics and finance editor, co-author of the Breitbart Business Digest. By the way, John, you did awfully well on the political panel last night. Nice work.
Thanks, Larry. Nice it was work. Really fun. I got to be with, the great Steve Forbes and Rich Lowry. It was amazing.
Mrs. Wilson, the best one. Mrs. Wilson actually was in the Breitbart, did a good write-up of what you guys were saying. So did you get the thing I sent you on the woke Taylor rule?
I did, and it makes a very good point.
Larry Lindsay.
Larry Lindsay points out that really what the Fed should be aiming at and what traditionally they've aimed at is a much higher rate compared to where we are on inflation. And it seems like the Fed has come all the way down. Instead of adding, thinking that we should be around 2%, 2.5%, it's all the way down to 0.5. Mm-hmm. So in other words, people have too low of a nominal rate in their heads.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons the market is pricing in all of these rate cuts. And it's not going to happen. They can't bring down inflation and have that many rate cuts happen this year.
Well, I think, it's interesting, too. You made this point. Lindsay makes this point. If the Fed is so tight, then why is the economy growing in both real and nominal terms relatively rapidly?
That's right. I mean, very rapidly in both nominal and in real terms. We've seen incredible growth. We saw the real growth of 3.3%. in the fourth quarter, 4.9% in the third quarter. And yet the Fed keeps saying that the stance of monetary policy is restrictive. But you look and you say, what did you restrict? Mm. Even housing, which you think would be the number one thing that you would restrict. Home prices keep rising. So it's not really being very restrictive at all. And in fact, it may actually be having the perverse effect of causing more home building, because so many people don't want to sell their homes to get a higher mortgage, that the new home market is actually doing better than anybody thought it would.
Mm. So the outlook, I'm assuming you're not changing your view. The rate cut outlook is slow. The Fed's in no rush to do anything.
That's right. And we've had several Fed speakers this week that made it very clear. From the very, from the most dovish people on the Fed, frankly, very new Fed governors have come on and said, we don't think we need to rush at all. I mean, why would the Fed need to rush? It would need to rush if unemployment was rising rapidly and they wanted to try to stem a recession. Unemployment is not rising at all. We added 353,000 jobs. We're averaging, 3-month average is 286,000. There's no rush to cut rates. So why wouldn't they just sit tight, see what happens with inflation? Maybe interest rates are just right and they should hold it there. Maybe they need to go higher if inflation doesn't keep coming down. There's no need to cut now. And I don't think there will be a need to cut throughout, you know, well into the summer. And I think they very well may discover that they probably don't need to cut at all until after the election.
Mm. I notice also you were in your latest digest, you're talking about Christopher Waller as probably the heaviest intellectual guy in the board. You know, he was, John, he was my recommendation to President Trump in 2020. I got him through, I didn't know him. It was Jim Bullard of the St. Louis Fed, who I did know, who's also a smart guy. He's the one who called me about Waller. And then I interviewed Waller and then brought him downstairs to meet with the boss. And he's a very impressive guy, scholarly guy. I think he was the research guy at the St. Louis Fed, but he taught econ at Notre Dame for a whole bunch of years. And I think
he really is, I think, the most intellectually heavyweight Fed governor we've had in a long time.
Long time, yeah.
And I think, actually, that's one of the reasons that his views should be really closely watched, because the other people on the Federal Open Market Committee recognize him as somebody who really deeply understands monetary policy and the economy. And so that he, when they're trying to figure this stuff out, they're going to look to Waller's views. So that's why we pay a lot of attention to what he's saying. And he's done a really good job. One thing I like is that he is flexible. He's not somebody who just has one position all the time. You know, oh, I always want to cut, or I always want to, you know, raise. He says, I'm looking at the economy.
All right. I know. That's good. And he's very cautious on rate cuts now, too.
Yes, he is.
All right. Terrific stuff. John Carney, Breitbart, we appreciate it very much. Folks, we'll take a quick break. The other side of the break, Cash Patel, Defense Department advisor and lawyer. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. You know, in the middle of all this Robert Hur reports and illegalities and incompetencies, in the middle of this news conference Thursday night, Joe Biden starts hitting on Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel. Said they were over the top. And I guess before that, maybe it was the same day, Thursday, spoke to some Democratic conference and started cussing at Netanyahu, which is very weird. So we're going to bring in Cash Patel, former chief of staff to the Secretary of Defense and a former senior director of counterterrorism at the National Security Council during the Trump administration. And Cash's great book called Government Gangsters, The Deep State, The Truth, and the Battle for Our Democracy. Cash, welcome back, as always. What, as I understand it from the reports, Israel's fixing to go heavy in the south of Gaza, which could be some kind of final thrust, I don't know. And here's Biden attacking him at the press conference Thursday with the whole world watching, and then I guess cussing at him at some Democratic conference meeting earlier that day or the day before. I thought Israel was our ally, Cash. What am I missing here?
Larry, great to be with you. And as we talked on your wonderful TV show, Israel is our number one ally over in that region. But this commander-in-chief has finally snapped. Mm. It is a combination of a weak cognitive ability, which we've all known about, and now that has been combined with an attitude of a feckless child. And this is the individual in charge of our nuclear codes and our national defense. Mm. And by criticizing childishly our number one ally's premier over there during a time of war, he has opened up our flank even more so to the 24 known terrorists that have already invaded through the southern border from the same enemy, Iran, that has charged that war against Israel. So I don't know what the game plan is, but unfortunately, Larry, this is just another way that America's national security has been weakened by this president's personal proclivities to punch back at the media when we all now know that he's guilty of possessing classified documents unlawfully, and he wants the media to carry its weight, and it looks like they won't even stand for it.
What, Cash, just backtrack a second. The 24 terrorists, these were Iranian terrorists?
Yeah, so what happened was the FBI director Chris Wray and Mayorkas testified before Congress about 2 to 3 months ago, saying that of the 11 million illegals that have come in, those two agencies have caught a stop 24 known foreign terrorist affiliates, largely with Iran and Al-Qaeda. but they lost them. Mm. They actually told Congress they lost them and they don't know where they are in the United States. Now, I don't believe that number is just sitting at 24. I think it's more. And that's not counting the everyday savage criminals that are committing murders in like my home state of Nevada and down in Texas. Mm. So it's a scary thought. It hasn't been fixed. And because Joe Biden is now ticking off our enemies and our allies even more so, I think they will increase the thrust at which, at which they come at the United States of America, be it at our border or elsewhere.
Wow. So on this other matter, I mean, it looks like Israel is going to go heavy in South Gaza. That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, I would like to see our administration backing them. And, you know, the other thing we found, which came out, this whole business about the UN Relief Agency being, we all knew this. You've talked about this, chock full of Hamas sympathizers, but actually may have even taken part in the Israeli massacre on October 7th, I mean, I can't wait for Israel to clean up southern Gaza, to tell you the truth. So I'm watching Biden, and he's going through all the horror shows of the HER report, and then all of a sudden he pops off with this, and then I read about, I'm not going to use the word on the radio, but he was cussing out Netanyahu. This is crazy stuff, Cash. You know what I mean? This is like Keystone Cop stuff. This isn't serious stuff. You're not adults. This is not adult stuff.
No, and look, remember, this individual, our commander-in-chief, is responsible for our nuclear arsenal, our nuclear command, and the nuclear football. Larry, you and I traveled to President Trump when I was responsible for the nuclear football, I think some 45, 50 times. Never once did President Trump show any sort of cognitive decline. In fact, he showed cognitive authority when making the decisions to defend this country, whether it was taking out Soleimani or Baghdadi or bringing home an American hostage or ending the forever wars. That's what you want to see in a president. What we're seeing with this childish action, with this fiendish addiction of Joe Biden's to somehow go after those in the world when he is proven wrong, when he's proven a liar, is scary. And to me, the worst flank that's been exposed is the national security one. Hmm. He told the world the day after this war started on October 7th that he spent 48 hours with his national security team on October 8th and 9th so he could defend this war and help our allies. In the Robert Hur report, it is specifically stated that Joe Biden spent 48 hours on October 8th and 9th sitting down for a deposition for this special counsel report. So instead of protecting this nation and our allies, and being truthful with us, he lied to us, and on the eve of war, and right after, he prioritized his own self-importance over that of the United States.
At some point, Cash, that is, you know what? I hadn't thought about that. I should have pieced that together. That is, you're the first guy to say it. That is some point, right? He was sitting down with Robert Hur. How could he have been with the National Security Council all that time? God, that is a fascinating point. Holy cow. I got to file that one away for this coming week. The whole issue here, no one's explored this yet, but if his memory is so bad and he's incapable and incompetent and so forth, let me put it somewhat differently. If he is not sufficiently competent to stand trial, which is what the HER report suggests, how is he sufficiently competent to be our commander-in-chief? Isn't that really a painful bottom-line question?
It's a painful bottom-line question that must be asked and demanded of our commander-in-chief because of what his job is, because of what he auditioned for and to do. And when you have this report that literally, and me as a former national security prosecutor who used the Espionage Act to put away bad guys, when I saw that Robert Hur told me he intentionally possessed 40 years worth of classified documents at three different locations to the tune of 110 documents, I said, wow, this guy's getting charged. And then I got to the end. And when I read about the cognitive decline as the excuse to not charge him, conversation for another day, how they created another excuse like Comey did for Hillary Clinton at DOJ. Mm. But it exposed the depth and magnitude of the cognitive decline. And to me, I was horrified. It's not a Democrat or Republican thing. You want your commander in chief, above all things, to protect this nation and our allies, especially during times of war and when we have an open border down in the South. He needs to succeed at that. But if he can't defend us because he doesn't know right from wrong, he doesn't know left from right, And his first instance is to go out on the world stage and act like a child and, again, lie to the world about the documents being locked up and the fact that he can't even come to terms with he messed up, he could have owned it, and then thought, all right, now we need to focus on Iran, Israel, Ukraine, wherever else. But he's just not doing that. And it shows you what we've been talking about on the show, Larry. He does not prioritize the defense of this country as a number one issue.
What's going to happen, Cash, I don't know if you looked at it. So in the Senate, they've switched now. They're dropping the border control provisions. They couldn't get that worked out. And now they're looking at whatever, $60 billion for the Ukraine and various other things. I think it's about $14 billion for Israel and some money for Taiwan. How do you read that story? There's a lot of opposition to giving more money to Ukraine without any oversight strings, for example. How do you read that, Cash Patel?
You know, this is coming off the I'm sure you saw the interview with Tucker and Putin.
Yeah.
I don't agree with Vladimir Putin, but if we keep cutting the Ukraine checks, Vladimir Putin is going to keep going into his war in the Ukraine, which is essentially what he said. And we don't need another world war. But beyond that, and maybe more importantly, Larry, the budget for the United States Marine Corps for the entirety of 2023 was $53 billion for 1 year. We want to give the Ukrainians another $60 billion, $7 billion more than our defense of the United States Marine Corps in 1 day? I don't think so. Maybe I'm old school, but I want our troops and veterans taken care of. I think there's just issues here about sealing the border that must be a priority. I think more and more Americans are taken to it. Look, in Texas just the other week, we had an illegal immigrant charged with capital murder because he murdered and raped and strangled a 16-year-old high school sweetheart. Just think about that. That's one instance of the unlawfulness that people are sick and tired of here. So while we need to help our allies overseas, Congress needs to put its big boy pants on and figure out how to protect Americans at the same time. And then I think this bill has a chance. But unless it does that, I don't know that the Americans are going to like it. But listen, the defense industrial complex usually wins the day because they own most of the swamp. So I wouldn't be surprised if this thing squeaked through.
But that stuff should be broken out country by country.
Yeah.
Hearings and inspector generals. I mean, I don't know what the best financial accountability process would be, but it just strikes me as I don't like omnibus spending bills of any kind, Cash, domestic or foreign. What they're trying to do is the foreign version of one of these domestic spending bills that basically no one knows what's inside it. And the proper restraints are not put on these monies. Now, I didn't know about this $53 billion Marine Corps. That strikes me as a very low number. I don't know enough about their budget, but I would agree with that just on the face of it. I mean, I had Rand Paul on the show last night. Now, Rand Paul doesn't want to spend any money overseas, but he said he'd been calling for an inspector general on the Ukraine money. Now, that strikes me as sensible. What's wrong with that? But that's not in this bill, as far as I know.
No, look, when I was at Chief of Staff at DOD, one of the things we focused on in the Trump administration was auditing our own agencies and departments to be monetarily responsible to the American people. Under the Biden administration, one of the DOD inspector generals for Joe Biden came out and said, we, the United States, lost $1.2 billion worth of weapons we sent to the Ukraine. Hang on a second. We're going right back to Afghanistan days. That's just one report and one investigation, and what you're calling for is spot on. That these people in Congress are trying to float this almost head fake before the CR nightmare on March 5th or 6th, whenever that's coming. And they don't want to tackle the real issues of simply putting accountability of American taxpayer dollars going overseas. Look, after dropping $125 billion in Ukraine, that number's not a billion. That number's probably more like $30 or $40 billion that we don't know where the arms and weapons are. And just like that happened in Afghanistan, when we ended up losing money and weaponry to the enemy who would use it to kill us. That's where I fear we're going, because right now they're still able to say, oh, we don't have U.S. soldiers on the ground. But listen, it's a war. It's a war of basically the making of the enemy and Joe Biden's failure to protect this country. And the same thing's going on in Israel with the Iranians, the number one state sponsor of terror. And we now have five American dead soldiers to boot, which is the worst tragedy of all. And we want to keep flushing them with more cash after Joe Biden gave Iran $6 billion. We want to give you, like you said, there's no single entity that's accountable, because everybody's just bundling this thing together like it's some giant washing machine so they can print the headline to say we gave more money to Ukrainians. And that's just not the priority.
It'd be nice to have a competent commander in chief, just saying. Cash Patel, former Chief of Staff, Secretary of Defense, former counterintelligence expert. Thanks very much, Cash. As always, great stuff. Appreciate it. Folks, take a quick break here, and we're going to go to the great pollster, John McLaughlin, talk about some of Donald Trump's outstanding numbers, why he's doing well with younger people, with blacks, with Hispanics, and so forth. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
Larry Kudlow. Now, back to the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. So, let's take a look at these polls. Very strong for Trump, and Biden's probably in free fall. We bring in ace pollster John McLaughlin, who was the CEO of McLaughlin and Associates. John, welcome back. Best regards to brother Jim. Anything coming up since that catastrophe Thursday press conference from Biden?
No, but we've had a prelude to it. I mean, there'll be lots of polls that will come out. I wish the election was tomorrow. Trump was already up. You go to the Real Clear Politics average, he was leading them by 2 points. Economist YouGov had us up a point. Morning Consult had us up five. These are all polls that had us losing back in 2020 and right 2016. And our latest poll, which was last week, has Trump leading 47-43. But the most interesting and by the way, with Kamala Harris, Biden's impeachment insurance, Trump's leading 50-42. So the Democrats are petrified because there's no relief from the 25th Amendment for them. So but I tell you that when we did a poll that was – it's on our website at McLaughlinOnline.com. We did it for Euronews, the battleground states, 17 battleground states. Trump was up 48-43. And when we asked about Biden's characteristics or weak points, the number one was his health and mental fitness. So the voters were already there. 82% of all voters in the battleground state. And by the way, immigration was number two at 79%, illegal immigration. And this Tuesday, you have a by-election test of immigration as an issue because in New York 3, Mozzie Pillip is running against Tom Suozzi. And Tom Suozzi, when he was in Congress, voted 100% for Joe Biden and also on his immigration policy supporting sanctuary cities. And he, when he was county executive, he bragged about throwing ICE out. It's the number one issue in the district because, you know, part of it's Queens, 80% is Nassau, but the Queens part, you have New York City police being beat up in Times Square, shot at by 15-year-old Venezuelan illegal immigrants. And this is because Biden is so weak. And inflation, by the way, is number three at 76% for Joe Biden's weak point. So when I was listening to you and Kevin Hassett talk about a supply shock.
Let me just get this right. You're saying health was his number one issue?
Number one weak point.
Point.
We asked the question. What is Biden's weak point among all voters? They're saying his health and mental fitness at 82% because Democrats are worried.
Well, what's going to happen to that after after this HER report? And by the way, after that press conference, which was a nighttime press conference, I don't know what the ratings were, but probably more people watch it than usual.
By the way, there was a brilliance in that most people didn't pick up on, because HER's report basically said we're not going to prosecute Biden on these charges of having confidential documents, but we are prosecuting Trump.
Yeah.
And the double standard, because our last national poll had there's a double standard of justice among all voters, 54-34. And they said this election, the court should decide the voters should decide, not the courts, 56-36. And on the indictments against Trump, 69% of all voters said they're political, and 57% said Joe Biden played a role. Biden is out there, you know, HER said the guy's basically mentally feeble and can't remember things and he's a nice old guy. But he didn't say he's a corrupt old guy.
He is a corrupt. It's illegal. What he did was illegal. We've talked about it. He's violated the Presidential Records Act, probably violated the Espionage Act, but I know he's violated the press. That's been lost, John. That was my opening.
Yes.
That point has been, I don't care whether he was a nice old man with no memory. For 15 years, he took documents and kept them out of the National Archives. That is against the law. And everybody knows that. And in some sense, far too much attention is being paid to his feebleness and not enough attention to the fact that he's been a serial lawbreaker for at least 15 years.
And that's exactly my point. For those of us who practice these political arts, being political consultants and pollsters, it was the biggest diversion going, because how do you prosecute it? He's pushing, at the same time, he's pushing Merrick Garland and Jack Smith to bring cases that have never been brought before against Donald Trump while they're letting him off. Right. And I tell you what, back in October of 2020, during the election, the night before the second debate, Trump calls me and he says, do you think I should make this Hunter Biden laptop issue, corruption, an issue? And I said, I just happen to have your campaign's battleground state poll, and it says, if you vote for Biden, what do you like least? His age. If you vote for Trump, what do you like least about Biden? His corruption. They're burying his corruption with his age.
The age thing. Right. I mean, the only exception now, John, is the age thing has become so big with the 25th Amendment surfacing. Actually, it was Claudia Tenney that first raised that. I did it on the TV show. But, you know, okay, so they're hurt on both sides. But the illegality and corruption is key. Now, of course, he lied about the laptop. He knew he lied. And we don't have time to go through all that.
Right.
I'm just saying, I'm going to guess, John, I'm going to give you, would we have 20 seconds? Now we're out of time. John McLaughlin, we love you. We'll have you on another time to talk about that. My guess is Biden's polls are going to go. He hasn't hit bottom yet. He's a stock looking for a bottom after this story. Anyway, folks, we will take a break. Thanks to ace pollster John McLaughlin. On the other side of the break, at the top of the next hour, we're going to do some stock market work with Jack Baruzian and Mike Ozanian. And I'm Kudlow. Stick around, folks. Lots more to talk about.
It's the Larry Kudlow Show. Free market prosperity starts here. Now, here's Larry Kudlow.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Larry Kudlow. Great pleasure to be with you. By the way, please join us during the week. Fox Business. Name of the show is Kudlow, 4 to 5 p.m. every day, Monday through Friday. If you can't get us at 4, you can text your favorite 9-year-old, and she will show you how to DVR the show. Can't miss a thing. It does play again from 7 to 8, rerun. And here on the radio, you can catch us live streaming on the Internet, LarryKudlowShow.com, LarryKudlowShow.com. All across the country, around the world, throughout the solar system, including the Milky Way. So you can't miss a thing here. So we're going to look at the stock market. Let's bring in our guests right away. We have Jack Baruzian, chairman of the Global Smart Commodity Group. We have Mike Ozanian, assistant managing editor of Forbes Media and co-host of Forbes Sports Money on the YES Network. So, gentlemen, front page of the Wall Street Journal this morning, S&P 500 pushes above 5,000 mark on economic strength. The indexes, the NASDAQ, the S&P, and the Dow have risen during 14 of the past 15 months. The S&P 500 hasn't had a run like that since a stretch that ended in March of 1972, which was followed by a very bad stretch, but we won't go there at the moment. Persistent strength in labor markets, corporate earnings continue to grow. We'll get a fresh read on inflation and retail sales this coming week. And the tech sector continues to do very well, and I notice and producer Drosh talked about chip maker NVIDIA continues to lead the pack, up 3.6%. Boy, that's something. NVIDIA, how about that? So I want to add one more thing, though. I was reading Ed Hyman's stuff. He pointed out in one of his reports this past week that Let's see. S&P earnings for the fourth quarter, the consensus is now 215. And that would give you a price-earnings ratio of 23 times on the S&P. So that's a little pricey. I don't want to throw a monkey wrench into this story, but I just wonder how long this can go. So, Mike Ozanian, why don't you start us off? How long can this go? And what is your outlook? And is
I'm suspect. I'm very suspect. And, you know, it's very interesting, guys. We sort of have this big bifurcation in what's happening in the economy. And I sort of split it into two groups. The income statement side, which is what Wall Street seems to be fully focused on. The news has been positive. We've had earnings growth. We've had strong consumer spending. We've had an uptick in productivity. All good. But you go to the balance sheet side, and the news has been really, really bad, right? The CBO report that came out projecting deficits. There hasn't been much CapEx spending. Small banks and their real estate situation is not good. There's a lot of concern there. And delinquency rates on credit cards and auto loans spiked to their highest level since the Great Recession, according to the New York Fed report that came out. So there's this real, real split. And I'm of the school that I just don't think the labor market is as strong as some of the optimists believe it to be. And therefore, I don't think consumer spending is going to continue to be as strong as it's been. So I'm concerned about that. Most of the job gains since February of last year have been part-time work, and it's been heavily driven, the full-time jobs, by the government.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe that's one reason, guys, why, you know, if you look at the GDP numbers, which is sort of the spending version of the economy versus the gross domestic income version of the economy, there's a huge, huge gap. GDP is up like what, 3.5%, but GDI is up less than 1%. So I'm very cautious at this point.
And this measure, gross output, which was started by Mark Skousen, professor out in California, it's a business to business measure. That thing's been down to, flat to down. In fact, business itself, when you look at the investment side of the GDP accounts, business investment's been flat. And so business is kind of tottering on a recession. You're right, consumers are strong. Government is very strong. Of course, that CBO report, I was talking to Kevin Hassett earlier, that does not bode well for the future economy unless those spending and deficits and borrowing is curbed. But you're right. I mean, you make good distinctions, Mike Ozanian. I think those are some things people have to worry about. Look, the Kudlow Trust is doing very well. I own the index. I always own the index. So what the heck? I'm happy to see it go up. But Jack Bruggen, what do you think? How do you see this story?
I think Mike hit the nail on the head. And I'll tell you why. Something's broke in the market. And I'll give you an example of why it's broke. There is no short interest anymore. Nobody wants to be short this market. And you and I know, as veterans, it doesn't work that way. You can't have this kind of irrational exuberance, to use words that Chairman Greenspan used, and have it continue. It's not something that has legs, that has traction. Now, having said that, you have to be surprised. You have to be surprised at how well the market has done, how well they've navigated through this entire mess. And the one thing that I will point out, and I did take a step back and do a little research, and I thought to myself, what's been causing this? You know, stocks are now up 15% since the Fed started raising rates. Most of it has been over the course of the last 7 months. And what happened starting 7 months ago? President Trump's poll numbers started getting better. And you started seeing Biden's numbers going down. There is a strong correlation there between the appetite for risk that took control of the market back in late September, early October, and it's here to this very day. It's actually kind of surprising on the one hand, but on the other hand, it explains why the markets are doing so well in spite of Bidenomics. Because it's being pulled forward.
Well, I have seen those charts, And you know where my sympathies are regarding the presidential election. I just think it's a little, I don't know. There's a lot of factors in the stock market. The political factor is an interesting point. And the markets are rallying while this Robert Hur report came out. So I understand the point of view. I'm not sure I buy it, but I understand it. It's a nice point of view to a person like myself. Jack Prusian, what's doing in the commodity markets? I watched them very carefully. It looks like commodity prices are fairly stable right now. I watched the CRB and the, whatever it's called, the Goldman Sachs, the S&P Goldman Sachs. It looks like that's fairly stable. Is that your read?
It's bifurcated, actually, Larry. You know, if you look at certain things like natural gas is under $2. It's as cheap as it's been in decades.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at copper, that's under $4. That's good. But when you look at the softs, you look at sugar, you look at cocoa, it's the Wild West there. You look at cattle, it's near its all-time highs. So there is a big division there. There's still some problems within the supply chain that need to be corrected. But the big question that we all have, especially with commodity prices, is the question of China and whether there'll be some contagion there. Remember, China is going to go through deflation over the course of the next year. You see it happening with their real estate. You see it happening with everything around them. And the question is whether we're going to see any of that leak over. We have disinflation now, which is good. The question is whether that turns into outright deflation, which is bad.
Well, in yesterday's radio, I do a hit for John Catsimatidis, the owner of this station. He's a very good investor. He raised the point about supply problems in the Suez Canal and the Red Sea. Now, we're not seeing that in the pricing, but insurance rates are way up. And obviously, people are bypassing some of those seaways. Is that out there? Is that a risk? You don't see it yet. You don't see it in the oil markets, which I always look at first.
That's the only place you'd really see it affected. I mean, and quite frankly, I mean, we do see some of it. For example, shipments that are going cocoa sugar that are coming out of Africa or going from Brazil across over into the Indian region, into the Indian Ocean. There are problems with some of those shipments, but that's not what runs the world. You and I know that crude runs the world. Mm. And as far as crude is concerned, we're the biggest producers. You know, that's the quiet little secret that the Biden administration won't tell anybody is that we're producing more crude now than ever before in history.
Well, by a cat's whisker. It's 13.2 million barrels a day. It was 13.1 pre-COVID. We should be at 14 or 15 million barrels a day.
Well, the reality is we probably will be one day. The question is whether, you know, he continues to lie to his constituency, you know, and that's really what that's all about.
Mike Ozanian, the 10-year note back to 4.18. Actually, interest rates went up quite a bit this week. Not the short rate. That's stuck. Fed's not going to cut rates, Michael Zane. I mean, they're not going to cut rates. There's no reason for them to cut rates.
No. One of the things that, well, maybe I'm too old school to discuss. Can we still talk about the money supply? I'm not really sure.
Yes.
Anyway, you know, they really had choked off. The money supply had gone into negative territory going about a year. But on a month-over-month basis, the last few months, it started to increase again.
Mm-hmm.
So given that and given where, you know, inflation, the rate of growth had slowed, but now the last couple of months, it's sort of plateaued, if you will. It's not gone down anymore. So I think given the money supply, given where the inflation rate is, I don't see the Fed cutting. And look, you know, something that you guys know better than I, the Fed can't control long-term rates, right? Mm-hmm. So I would not be a buyer of bonds because I don't see long-term interest rates coming down. I really don't see that. And I think going forward, it's going to be a very tough slogging through in terms of the economy, inflation, and interest rates. And it's going to be very, you know, you started this off by talking about how the market is priced, and it kind of brought me back to the late 90s where, you know, you had all these tech companies like Dow and all, and these others, and they were trading at really high price earnings ratios. And people were saying, well, look at their margins, look at their growth rate. Don't be concerned about price earnings ratios. And then lo and behold, a few years later, a lot of these stocks came crashing down. You know, price does matter. Mm-hmm. And I think you're asking about risk, Larry, and I think the valuations relative to risk are out of whack. I think valuations are too high relative to risk.
Well, that was Ed Hyman's point. I think this thing's getting too pricey. The money's fly, you know. Look, I was trained as a monetarist a million years ago in college, but it did predict the lower inflation rate, but you would have expected a recession. That's the flaw in that model. You go from 20% round numbers, actually it's about 25%, down to minus something, 4 or 5%, over an 18-month period. Yes, inflation came down, as per Friedman, but you would have expected money, GDP, and the economy to tank, and it never did. It's fascinating. Right. I don't know that we understand that, but it's one of many models. The leading economic indicators model hasn't worked. The inverted yield curve model hasn't worked. It's just an interesting theoretical proposition. Anyway, gentlemen, I've got to take a theoretical commercial break to pay for this show. Jack Verugin, Global Smart Commodity Group, Mike Ozanian, Assistant Managing Editor of Forbes Media, and co-host of the great show Forbes Sports Money. That thing's on Yes Network. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
It's the Larry Kudlow Show. Free market prosperity starts here. Now, here's Larry Kudlow.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Larry Kudlow. Great pleasure to be with you. Mike Ozanian, Assistant Managing Editor of Forbes Media, co-host of Forbes Sports Money on the Yes Network. By the way, Mike, Steve Forbes was on the TV show last night and talked about Mrs. Wilson. Mrs. Wilson. Now, Jill Biden is directing the White House, because her husband is not capable, apparently, according to the Robert Hur report and other pieces of evidence. So you have to go back in time to 1919 and 1920. It's even older than Steve Forbes and I actually are. But it was Edith Wilson. Remember, Woodrow Wilson had a stroke, and he was incapacitated, and they kept him in his bedroom. And it was Edith Wilson who ran the government for about a year and a half. And so Steve Forbes blurts this out, and our entire panel spent the next 10 minutes laughing. It was the greatest thing I've ever seen. Rich Lowry was on, John Carney, myself. Anyway, your boss is just the most wonderful human being.
He is amazing. I've learned so much from him over the years.
I know.
He's a genuine treasure.
Yeah, gargantuan intellect. You're exactly right, and a very sweet-mannered person. Michael Zanin, one of you said you wouldn't invest in bonds. I can't remember which one, but I'm going to ask you both sides. Where would you invest? Would you stay in the stock market, or would you lighten up? I mean, you know, you get paid 5% plus in cash, so I just wonder whether that's an option.
For me, you know, we talked about bifurcation a lot, so I'm going to, you know, the big cap tech stocks, the growth stocks have really carried this market over the past decade. The small, cheap stocks have fallen way behind the S&P 500. A very inexpensive way to play the small, cheap stocks now is with the Vanguard Small Cap Value Fund, LSV Small Cap. Markets rotate, as you know, sectors rotate. I'm not a genius. I can't time it. But I do know they rotate, and I think that's a good bet. My second play would be, as you guys know, because you're big sports fans, there was that new streaming joint venture announced last week.
Right. Yes.
Disney, Fox, and Warner Brothers Discovery. But I don't think what a lot of people realize, I think Fox is a good investment based off of this. And the reason why I say that is that of the three companies that are partnered in the JV, only Fox has nearly all of its networks included in the new streaming package. And the way I see this is it means that it has the most to gain from the incremental subscribers it could attract. And it also has the least to lose from any cannibalization. In other words, people no longer watching on linear TV and going to streaming. Right. So I think the Murdochs did a really, really smart thing here.
Well, of course, I work for Fox Media, but I will say the Murdochs are very smart. Jack Bruggen, I got 30 seconds. Favorite investment, buddy.
Look at the exchanges, CME Group, ICE. Remember, they're going to take advantage of all the volatility that we see coming in over the course of the next 12 months.
Wow.
It's a good way to play it all.
All right, terrific stuff. We'll leave NVIDIA and Alphabet and Microsoft. High flyers. They'll probably still high fly. Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate it very, very much. Jack Bruggen and Mike Ozanian. Folks, hang out. We're going to have Liz Peek and Steve Moore, Money and Politics, next up on Kudlow.
It's the Larry Kudlow Show. Free market prosperity starts here. Now, here's Larry Kudlow.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Larry Kudlow. Great pleasure to be with you. You see, radio host of More Money that plays on many of these very same stations right after this show. Kids, welcome back. So, Liz Peek, you're going to have your wish now that we've declared Joe Biden to be not only illegal but incompetent. It's time for Michelle Obama through the 25th Amendment.
Yeah,
it's going to happen in our lifetime.
I wrote about this a long time ago.
Yes, you did.
Because it works, Larry. It works for the Democrats in this way. If Joe Biden at the convention is forced to step aside, or if Democrats just decide they don't want to nominate him as their candidate, the only person who comes to this race fully loaded is Michelle Obama. And by fully loaded, I mean she's the world's most popular woman in America, and she can draw on the incredible fundraising apparatus of the Democratic Party and the Obama machine to fund a very quick campaign. And the quick campaign is important because she won't be out there very long. People won't get a chance to really know her, to really understand that they might not like her politics. They might not like her resentment about being allowed to go to Princeton University, et cetera. So I think the whole thing kind of works. We'll see.
By the way,
can I say one other thing?
Of course.
Betting odds as of today have President Trump at around 52%. Obama's way behind, 25 to 30. Michelle Obama's next at 15. Kind of interesting.
Steve Moore, let me guess. If Michelle Obama runs, who will her top policy advisor be? Let me just guess.
Oh, I'd say Kamala Harris.
I'd say Barack Obama.
Sure.
Think about that. Here we go again. I thought we left this story a while back, but it's coming back.
Obama's fourth term, right? Because Biden's third term was his third term. I agree with a lot of what Liz was saying. I too have been suggesting for the last 18 months that I just didn't see how Biden could possibly run again. And after what happened on Thursday, both in terms of the report that came out from the prosecutor and his press conference. I think it's elder abuse to put him out there like that. I really do. And I'm not trying to be snide. In fact, I, as a Trump guy, I want to run against Joe Biden, but and Liz is also right that, before this all happened, a week and a half ago, Biden was 80% probability to be the Democratic nominee on the betting lines. And now he's closing in on 50-50. And I bet that number continues to dwindle. Who they go with, I don't know. I mean, I have some Democrat sources who just say Michelle Obama doesn't want it. It's hard to persuade somebody to run for president if they don't want to be president. But I would say this, that the other question that we've talked about on this show, Larry, is how do you get Kamala Harris out of the way? Because she's the only person who's probably less qualified to be President Joe Biden at this point.
Well, I think that, I know the Michelle Obama thing is out there, and kudos to Liz for writing about it a while back. But I think there's a fist fight if Joe Biden, some way, shape, or form, is gone. Kamala's going to fight hard for it. Gretchen Whitmer's going to fight hard for it. Gavin Newsom's going to fight hard for it, and other people. I don't think it'll be so easy. In other words, I don't see Michelle Obama being crowned in some sense. I think it's going to be a real fistfight.
So I'm going to just throw one other name in the hunt just to be mischievous. Hillary.
Oh, God.
Bring her back.
Not a chance.
I couldn't take that.
Not a chance. And she's so disliked.
And her running mate would be James Comey. But
I don't see that happening. And to raise one more possibility,
yeah.
If Michelle Obama says, okay, I'll do it because it's an emergency for our party, but yeah. only 4 years, then I think, you know, the Gavin Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer thing kind of gets resolved, right? Because they're probably better off 4 years from now than they are. This would be such a food fight. So many people would hate whoever takes this role. And of course, we're fantasizing here because right now Joe Biden is determined he's going to be the guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazingly.
Fresh off his temper tantrum Thursday night. That was the most catastrophic news conference I've ever seen. Honestly. I mean, I don't know about the 25th Amendment, who's going to start that. But I just watched him. I mean, I think they're stuck with him. I'm very skeptical that he's going to be replaced. I know it's fun to speculate, but I think they're just stuck with the guy. And I'm perfectly happy to be stuck with him.
Yeah, me too.
You know, just perfectly happy because he's going to get whooped. All these people we mentioned.
By the way, just one other quick thing. The amazing thing is that, you know, as Liz just mentioned, right now, the most likely person to be the next president is Donald J. Trump.
Yes.
And that's
right.
An amazing thing when you think about
yes.
it. We're, you know, over the last 2 years. And
3 years.
You know, and,
3 years.
Really. It's just been a, you know, most people would not have thought Trump could make this incredible.
This is one of
comeback.
The greatest political comebacks ever.
It is. I like it.
You know, I mean,
he's good. The good Trump is with us, and he's been good now for, you know, the last year. His speeches are fantastic. He's optimistic. I don't know if it's you, Larry, that's, you know, he's pro-America. He's not.
There's a lot of us helping. But the point, even if you don't like Trump, you look at it objectively from
exactly.
where he was in early 2021 mm-hmm. to now. It's
yes.
an amazing comeback. Now, the outcome remains to be seen. I understand that. I'm just looking at it empirically. But yes, it's quite a remarkable comeback. I mean, we'll see. It's going to be great fun. Give us all lots to gab about, which is actually what
Amen.
We all do for a living.
Is there any way? Is there any way? You guys are the lawyers on this team. I mean,
I'm not the lawyer. I've never even looked at a law school. Are you kidding? The
but
lawyers.
I have a serious question. I know this is your show, but how in the world could Trump possibly be found guilty?
Right.
On these
yeah.
files
yeah.
after what's happened, where the prosecutor said he was guilty, but we just don't think a jury would find him guilty. It would be the greatest miscarriage of justice if now they came after Trump and convicted him of that.
Well, it's important to note here, this has come up a couple of times in this show, yesterday's TV show. Biden broke the law.
Right.
Yeah. There's a Presidential Records Act.
Yep.
Which
yep.
he's been breaking since he was a senator.
And willfully.
Willfully. And it was before he went, you know, loony or whatever he is.
Yeah.
And in her report, by the way, in 2017, he knew he had classified documents hidden in his garage. So, see, Trump, under the Presidential Records Act, did not break the law. They're trying to pin an espionage hit on Trump,
mm-hmm.
which they will never mm-hmm. prove, in my opinion. But whatever. That can be debated. But Biden broke the law. Look, I want to just branch off just a little bit. One thing, we are money in politics. I had Senator Rand Paul on the TV show last night, made a very strong case, Liz, with respect to the Ukraine money. Now, we've given up on the border control money. Now, Joe Biden is a lame duck. You'll probably not get anything through. But, you know, they're going to give $60 billion some odd to Ukraine, all right? No inspector general, no financial controls
right.
whatsoever.
Yeah.
And Rand Paul is now devoting him. I mean, he lashed out at Mitch McConnell and other Republicans last. He was very blunt. I think quite a lot of Rand Paul. The fact is, why are we going to put this money up when we don't necessarily know where it's going? And why would we put it into an omnibus spending bill without any control. We won't have any controls on any of the money they want to spend. This is so typical of what Congress does wrong.
Yeah, and I think people really are going to be angry about this because there have been reports of money gone astray. That goes back over a year now. And, you know, there have been delegations sent over to investigate, and they don't really and they find, yes, that there's corruption. This is, I forget what the ranking was. What is it? In the top 10 corrupt countries in the world before this war began. And so when you start throwing around tens of billions of dollars, I think our total now is over $100 billion we have sent to Ukraine. Are they kidding? Do they not imagine that we need people on the ground investigating where this money's gone? Because, Larry, we already know a lot of it's gone missing. Mm-hmm. And so that's just fueling resistance to supporting Ukraine in any meaningful way. And I really think this is a tremendous mistake on the part of people pushing for this spending, not to encourage oversight, encourage really strict controls. It's a little bit like sending billions into Gaza and pretending it's not going to end up in the hands of Hamas. Mm-hmm. We know that's just not true.
And Steve Moore, there's always, as Rand Paul said this, and you're a pal of Rand Paul's too. Rand Paul said this last night, there's always a dozen or 15 Republicans that go along with these bills for no good reason. They just go along with them. And it's part of the, look, I don't really feel like railing against Mitch McConnell. I think he's, you know, done some great work down through the years, but not recently. I think we need a new leader, fresh blood. Uh-huh. But whatever. The point is the GOP should stop this and institute controls. The other point is the southern border is more important to Americans right now than the Ukrainian border. I mean, that's just a fact of life. And Trump is running on that, and Biden is running against that.
Well, there's a lot there. I would say a couple things. One is that in addition to what you and Liz were talking about in terms of the oversight, why can't we pay for these things? I mean, come on. We've got the most obese budget right now. Right. Biden's added $6 trillion, and they can't find $50 to $60 billion to cut? Come on. What is this?
No pay for it.
Everything's no pay for it whatsoever. It's pathetic.
That's an important point.
Look, a Congressional Budget Office report came out. As you know, it comes out every January.
Next segment. Don't do it. I got it for the next segment.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Very important point. No. Yeah. Very important point. Didn't get the coverage because of the her report, but it's very important in what it says about the future. I like your point about the pay-fors, though. We've lost the whole idea. Now, people in the House still have pay-fors. They talk about that. But the senators are just hopeless. What a gang. Anyway, quick break. Liz Peek, Fox News contributor, and Steve Moore, Committee to Unleash Prosperity, Freedom Works, and importantly, More Money. He's the host of WABC Radio. More Money after this show on most of these same stations. I'm Kudlow. Be right back.
Larry Kudlow on 77 WABC. From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. We're talking money, politics with Liz Peek, Fox News contributor, and with Steve Moore, Committee to Unleash Prosperity Hotline, and WABC radio host. More Money coming up right after this show on most of these same stations. Didn't mean to cut you off, Steve Moore, buddy, but I wanted to get to this CBO report because it was overshadowed to some extent by the Robert Hur report controversy. But these numbers are outrageous. This is Joe Biden's baseline here. And the CBO did us a favor with these 50-year averages, which, by the way, covers my whole career, 74 to 23. I love this. I came to the New York Fed from Princeton in 1973, so I understand this 50-year average. But so as a share of GDP, which is a useful way of looking at it, spending runs from 21% to 24%. The budget deficit, 3.7 to 6.4% of GDP. Okay, 3.7 is bad enough. 6.4 is an outrage. And debt held by the public, this is the killer. Debt held by the public from 48% of GDP to 116% of GDP. And it is not a revenue problem because revenues
Right.
Maybe they're not scored right because you don't know about the Trump tax cuts. But basically, revenues are holding steady at slightly higher than 17% GDP. Now, Steve Moore, the other thing I'll mention is the growth rate in here is just slightly less than 2% for the next 10 years. So we're still stagnant, and we're growing the budget, we're spending, borrowing like crazy, and that means regulating like crazy, too. I mean, this is going to stop the economy dead in its tracks.
So we did a little item in our hotline this week where I looked at the average deficit under Trump versus the average deficit under Biden. And I took out the two COVID years. I took out 2020 and 2021 because those were an extraordinary event. And so, and look, Donald Trump, I love the guy, but he was not a big fiscal conservative. Right. We ran deficits of about $750 billion a year mm-hmm. under Trump. That's not a good record.
Mm-hmm.
But do you know how big the number is for the first 3 years of Biden? $1.5 trillion yeah. a year.
Yeah.
I mean, and for him to go around saying, oh, it's the Republican tax cuts. I did one other analysis. I looked at what was the CBO projecting, you know, for the debt and deficit when Trump left office versus what it is today. Biden has added, are you ready for this? $6 trillion above the amount we were already borrowing. This is the most financially reckless president ever.
Mm. Except for Michelle Obama. But I mean, the other part of this is the impact on economic growth.
Yes. Yep.
You cannot have a growing government like this, which absorbs money from the private right. sector. And as Laffer always says, when you see these big spending numbers, remember, these programs come with strings, regulatory strings attached. So this is a collectivist takeover of the private sector, and it's growing like Topsy.
And Larry, nothing could back that up more than something else that Steve has written about recently, which is the green agenda and the fact that you're spending, you're blowing, if you'll excuse the expression, hundreds of billions of dollars on stuff that is unproductive, is making people buy cars they don't want. And so we have to keep paying more for them to buy those cars because they increasingly don't want them. So, you know, it's not just a theoretical, not productive spending. We can see it. We can see it in this green subsidies and all the money that they're spending on things that really aren't going to pan out well.
You know,
Larry, did you see the thing about how, you know, how much Ford lost for every EV they sold?
Yeah.
They lost $60,000 for every car that they.
By the way,
unbelievable.
GM.
They wanted to keep going. I mean, that's incredible thing.
GM worse. Just saying, GM worse. But at least the CBO reestimated the misnamed Inflation Reduction Act because you know, remember that Penn Wharton estimate of over $1 trillion is going to be a lot closer to the truth because there's no ceilings or lids on either the time or the volume of credit. Now, that has to be taken out. And, Steve, I was talking to Kevin Hassett earlier in the show about this. Something Trump's saying, and Russ Vogt is on this, and I'm for it. Trump's got a push for a return to budget impoundment authority.
I love that. Yeah, I love it.
I think, you know, that's a kind of day one thing that needs to be done before you battle out all the appropriation stuff, which is going to be hard. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to extend the tax cuts.
Who used impoundment power?
Yes, you
know, very regularly.
Yes,
Franklin Roosevelt, Abraham Lincoln, Harry Truman.
Those guys
used it to control spending.
Right, that crowd. By the way, it was Richard Nixon who tried, and then Watergate.
Nixon too, yeah.
Watergate knocked him out, and they passed the Budget Reform Act of 1974, which was a disaster. Reagan tried impoundment. We did rescissions, but it wasn't good enough because rescissions require congressional votes. Okay, I want to just take stuff out. That's all. Just say.
I think Trump has legitimacy on this, or credibility, I should say. I think that's a very good thing for him to run on.
Yeah.
Americans who work in private enterprise routinely have their bosses coming along saying, okay, we're going to cut costs. Mm-hmm. We're going to cut costs by 5%. That idea never seems to occur to the government, and yet it should. And so, You know, I mean, I actually think this is true. I think right now we're at a point where people would welcome that assertion of power and that kind of claim, because going back to your point, when you were spending $4 trillion, are you serious? We can't find $60 billion. I totally agree with you, Steve. It's ludicrous to think that that budget is super tight, that airtight, you know, and there's no holes in it. It's not true.
Just start impounding from day one and let Congress yell. Yeah. Let everybody yell. Exactly. Let the whole town yell. Go ahead. It'll be fine, because he wants to drain the swamp anyway. Let him yell. And meanwhile, while they're yelling, the budget authorities inside the administration can start cutting. You know what I mean? And if they want to give it back later, let's talk. I mean, I really love this. It sets up so beautifully for Trump, you know, who will just drive people crazy, which is why we love him. Okay. I got to get out of here. Liz Peek, thank you very much.
We'll
plug you into the Michelle Obama campaign. And Steve Morse, more money coming up after this show on most of these same stations. I'm Kudlow. We'll be here next weekend. Thanks, everybody.